How About Them Podcast with Landon McCool.
How about them Cowboys indeed?
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the How About Them Podcast. I am Landon McCool, your host, and we are in the first week of legal tampering, everybody. Everyone get excited for legal tampering. No, there is legal tampering has its own fun and is quite a interesting way of phrasing the beginning of free agency. Why don't they just open free agency, guys? It just like they just have everyone start negotiating. Why does there need to be a tampering period at all? Just start free agency. I don't know. Anyways, yes. So we are at an interesting part of the offseason where the free agency is just at the beginning. You know, kind of in the stage of, like we said, the legal tampering, where you'll start hearing the early workings of the kind of first few free agency deals as they get signed. You know, the Cowboys aren't really usually involved in this first wave specifically of free agency, unless it's their own players and they've been kind of having an ongoing conversation about re-signing. So usually the Cowboys are kind of out of this, but it's still interesting to see exactly how the other teams around the league are starting to take shape. And, you know, a lot of teams that are inside the Cowboys division are often big players in the first few weeks of free agency. So it's important to keep track of that sort of thing. But that's not what this podcast is going to be about. This podcast is going to be specifically about the combine that just happened. So we just got all the numbers. We watched all the results. And what did we learn, guys? And, well, you know, we're going to talk about all that. We're going to talk about who did well, who didn't do well, and who do we need to go back and maybe, you know, dive a little bit deeper and look a little bit further into after seeing some of these numbers. So let's get into it with our check of
wins. Wide 80! Wide 80! Kill, kill, kill!
All right, so the combine. I think, you know, the first thing we need to do is I want to kind of establish how I digest combine results, because you know, having this conversation, and it feels like obviously it's an annual conversation for draft Knicks to, well, actually how to, you know, consume combine results, and you know, there always seems to be the ongoing battle of the people that are telling, you know, the metric folks to go watch the film, and then the film folks telling the metric folks to go watch the film, and then the metric folks telling the film folks, hey, you know, I could have seen that bust happening because this guy didn't meet certain athletic thresholds, but the film told you this. So, you know, obviously, just based on my sarcastic tone between those two groups, as you can tell, I lie somewhere in between. I do think that there is great value in getting a lot of these athletic measurements, especially in as close to a standardized, you know, homogenized state as you can, because it's important to kind of measure these guys' athleticism against each other, and then also against, you know, previous highs. You want to have an idea of where that player stands athletic wise to the rest of the league, and then what that can do is it can help provide more context to what you see on film. So the way I like to use combine results and just general kind of athletic testing results is, you know, I think I like it the way how it seems like the Cowboys use it. They definitely talk about, you know, a lot about thresholds when they discuss certain positions. They have, you know, requirements that they have for each position, you know, based, I think, often on the level of success. They've done studies. I mean, I think it would not be difficult, and I know some people that have done studies, just looking at the athletic profile of each position in the NFL and just, you know, based on that, determining what the average level of athleticism is at certain key athletic testing points, and then kind of comparing the data points each year as those rookies come in to see, okay, well, this guy looks like he's got, you know, middle of the road athleticism, but he's really, really fast. He's got really good 40 times, good straight line speed. So, you know, that's an important thing just to kind of see how they'll place and to see if they can carry their game into the NFL. And then beyond that, beyond just kind of looking for minimum requirements and having them clear, you know, hurdles, you you like to see guys confirm through athletic testing what you see on film, and that what that means in the real world can be as simple as, you know, I see a wide receiver who wins with speed. Like, this is a guy who just can blow past people. That's the way he wins. He's not great at, you know, point of catching at the point of attack or contested catches. You know, he's not like a vertical guy who's going to get up over somebody and catch it. But what this guy can do is he can run past you. So you wait, you watch this guy, you determine that's how he wins, and that's the best way for him to beat cornerbacks, and hopefully that's how he's going to continue to beat cornerbacks in the NFL. But he gets into Indy and he runs a 4.57, or he runs a 4.6 or something. Now look, that doesn't devalue what he did on tape at all. It just means, well, now I have to look at it and say, look, go back and look at his tape and say, okay, is he going to be able to have this success against cornerbacks in the NFL who clearly have, you know, a better athletic profile than the average corner in college football? So it's that kind of, you know, thing that it helps you, you know, looking at tape after tape after tape with, you know, team after team. There's so much variation in scheme. There's so much variation in talent level between teams in college football. It's tough to kind of find a baseline. It's kind of tough to find a through point that allows, you know, for proper comparison of players, you know, that play against different teams and in different schemes. And so I think what the athletic testing does is allows you kind of a way to contextualize what you see on film in a certain way. And I think, you know, when the other thing too is that if you're going to be asking a player to do something that is not necessarily something that you can see them do on film very often, then you can kind of use athletic testing. If you know the kind of traits that are required for that task, you can kind of use athletic testing to see, okay, well, he had a really good three cone time, so I think that means, you know, he's flexible, he's athletic, he can explode. I feel like he's going to be able to turn the corner on pass rush, even though maybe he didn't do it a lot in college. So stuff like that. This, you know, I really do think that it's important to use, you know, and there's also a third category I haven't brought up here, and it was funny because I actually witnessed a good friend of mine, Joey Ikes, kind of get into an argument with somebody that is, you know, what we would call, you know, the lowest on the caste system of draft Twitter would be, you know, box score scouts would be the term. You know, people that are really big on production, college production, and how it translates to college. And really what I found, and it's funny because, like, it feels like it's taken me a while to really believe in all three of these kind of measuring tools of prospects. But, you know, it's something that, you know, it goes all the way back to a guy like Bill Parcells, who talked about all three. He was really into getting, you know, all kinds, measuring all different types of information. He would weigh it differently, but I think the important message here is that you get as much information as you can with these guys. Some of it's important, some of it's less important. You weigh that accordingly, you know, based on how you like to watch prospects and judge prospects and scout prospects, and then you kind of, you know, create an opinion on a prospect based on how you weigh each of these kind of three pillars of a prospect: their college production, their athletic profile, and their actual film grade that you get by actually watching them on tape. So now, having said all that, I have three kind of main storylines. I mean, listen, lots of things happen at the combine. Lots of information comes out. I really recommend that you guys go and check out my buddy KD Drummond did a, I think, or it might have been actually Mike Fisher, now that I say that. Someone did a study, an article just based on the people that interviewed with the Dallas Cowboys, or at least admitted publicly that they interviewed with the Cowboys. It's always important to get this information, guys. Like, the Cowboys rarely draft someone that they don't visit with sometimes. So whether it's at the Senior Bowl, whether it's at the Combine, or specifically the people that they bring in later for their visits, or that they meet at Dallas Day or those kind of events, they usually end up drafting those guys. There's definitely been exceptions and notable exceptions, but on the whole, most of those guys are visits. So I definitely recommend to see go back and look and see the guys that were Cowboys visits at the Combine. You know, some interesting guys that, you know, including some Lance Dunbar looking types, some more diminutive, quicker water bug type running backs, change of pace guys. So it really kind of gives you an idea of what they're looking for, thinking free agent wise, and also maybe if there's going to be any schematic changes if they kind of go away from their normal prototype. So having said, I've spoken way too much about the outside stuff. Let's talk about what actually happened in the Combine and how it relates to the Cowboys. And to me, there were three groups that really were worthy of bringing up. Guys, everyone is going to be covering the Combine, so if you feel like I missed something, obviously take a look at FanRag Sports for coverage of all different types of stuff. But to me, these are the three main groups, especially through a Cowboys lens, that were important. And I think it starts with the pass rush. Quagmire is really no more clear after the Combine. I think a lot of us were looking for the Combine to help separate out, especially this kind of group after Myles Garrett, all the way through the, kind of lower second and third round guys. But I'm afraid that it feels like it's only gotten muddier. The three players that have kind of come into the Combine, with, you want to call it pad level or flexibility questions, and meaning, Tack, Charles Harris, Tim Williams, all turned what was kind of a minor issue into more major ones. Tack runs a 7.48 three cone. Harris runs a 7.47, and then Tim Williams runs a 7.36. For Tack, he plays high at times. It's on the tape. And it looks like he's a converted track athlete. So he looks very linear at times. So you were hoping, you're hoping for at least kind of an average three cone time, just to show, okay, well, he's athletic, he's flexible enough to do this. He's just, he isn't doing it very much on tape. He doesn't have as much experience at the position, but this is a really bad three cone time. Like, this is not just like it wasn't great, so I'm a little disappointed. Like, this was a bad three cone time, and it's concerning because it shows up in his tape, like we talked about, that he has pad level problems at times. So it's something to keep in mind. And for Harris, you see him win with speed, you see him win with a spin move, and the hope that was, he's also kind of football young. The hope is that he needed just some technique work to get his bend up a little bit. Missouri also lost their, kind of renowned defensive line coach who went to Miami. So, first half of Harris's season was not great because he was kind of playing out of position. And then when they finally fired their terrible defensive coordinator, Missouri got a new guy, and they kind of started one gapping with Harris again. So he started showing some better tape. So the hope was that you get in here, he'd show at least average flexibility with three cone testing. But it's terrible. 7.47, just like Tack, 7.48. It's really not a good score. And you have to think, as a pass rusher, he probably has to have been working on it if he's been training it all this offseason. So, for Williams, I'm a little less concerned because I've seen him bend before on film, and he also had an elite 10-yard split. I think it was 1.54, which is really good. I think 1.6 is what you want for a really good pass rusher, and his was 1.54. So, the problem is that it's just, with Williams, it's a bad three cone. It's not as bad as Tax and Harris's, but it's still really bad. And it's just a guy who doesn't need any more negatives on his evaluation. So he's already got some off-field concerns. You know, the one positive I will say for Tim Williams that seemed to have come out is that it did sound like there is talk that maybe teams aren't as concerned about Tim Williams' off-field problems as they were with Randy Gregory. So, you know, that there may be some positive there that maybe he's not as off as many people's boards as previously thought, and that may or may not include the Cowboys. But it you know, like I said, it's just a guy who doesn't really need another negative knock on his evaluation. And so, and then there's other guys like, you know, Taco Charlton, and then Alquadin Muhammad. I apologize if I said that wrong. Who just had bad overall combines. I mean, they, you know, Taco runs close to a 5.40, and so does Alquadin Muhammad, which is just crazy because everyone kind of thought he looked like a slightly less explosive Randy Gregory, and he is certainly more than slightly less explosive than Randy Gregory, if all these numbers are right. So that kind of muddies things up. And then, you know, Carl Lawson tested fantastic, had great tape, but also came into the combine and measured his arms at 31.5 inches, which, you know, there's maybe two other NFL edge players that have arms that short. So you don't really have a lot of comparable, you know, you don't have a lot of NFL comps that, you know, project success. That kind of makes it rough for him as a first round pick. It's like he feels like he's a very high floor player, but where is he going from here? I went to Auburn, so I'm very familiar with Carl Lawson and his past, and you know, I'm pretty certain his dad was a bodybuilder. So like he is, and if you look at him, he is absolutely ripped. So I really don't know that he has anywhere to go from here as far as athletic upside. And I think he wins with a lot of technique right now with power and handwork. So I just don't know. I think he has a really high floor. I just don't know how much further you're going to go with him. And then you've got, after him, you've got three guys who had great workouts, but you know, kind of have some serious questions. The guy who maybe had the most athletic workout was Tyus Bowser. I mean, athletic outside of Myles Garrett, who we're just not even bringing up in this, but he had one of an all-time work combine for defensive ends. But can Tyus Bowser play defensive end? You know, at his size, I don't know if he can handle playing right defensive end the whole time. He may have to be kind of a hybrid Sam linebacker, you know, defensive end guy. But I mean, if he can, he's incredibly athletic. You know, why did Jordan Willis test like an elite defensive end, produce relatively well, but look like a player who gets by with effort on tape? You know, I mean, he gets a lot of effort, second chance sacks, and he gets, there's just a lot of snaps where he gets going and doesn't look like he knows what he's doing. So, and then finally, the third, did Derek Rivers' incredible numbers prove he can make the jump from Youngstown State to starting defensive end in the NFL? All three of those are serious questions about guys that, you know, have all three kind of different questions, like three, you know, very serious questions, but everything else there looks right. You just need to get those serious questions answered about each one of those three prospects. And then you'll kind of have an idea of where their draft, value is for your team or, you know, for you. And lastly, in this group, you know, the guy who has me kind of starting to ask more questions is T.J. Watt. You know, he came into the combine. You know, I have to say, you know, coming into this process, I start into the draft process late often because, you know, of what we do with the podcast during the season. I spent a lot of time breaking down, you know, Cowboys film, and it doesn't allow for me to kind of keep up with the college game as much as a lot of, you know, my buddies and a lot of these great, really great Cowboys evaluators on here, like John Owning and you know, I mean, I could go, I play out Keith Mullins and, you know, draft Cowboys and all these guys and, that are, you know, do this kind of all year long, you know, Jonah Toll, all those guys kind of just are keeping up with this the whole time. You know, they keep tracks of this. I come into this with fresh eyes. I feel like I get more of the coach's perspective, whereas they're getting more of the front office scouting GM. They're with these guys the whole time. And I come into this kind of late in the process, you know, still kind of fresh with what the Cowboys are doing. And when I hear that TJ Watt, you know, who I know, you know, they tell us is JJ Watt's brother is coming into the league. It feels like, well, is this just another nepotism situation? And, you know, I understand bloodlines and all that, but is this guy, you know, and you hear talk about him, you know, in the top of the second round or, you know, second day two guy, potentially, you know, you just wonder like how much of this is really a little bit of nepotism and is this guy really as good as they're talking about it? You know, I watched some of his tape and I felt like, okay, you know, they use him, in, you know, interesting ways. He looks like he's athletic. He's clearly smart. He clearly knows how to, you know, he has a plan, which is really kind of fun to watch. And he's good at improvising in order to make a play. I just don't know where he was playing. I just, you know, and I didn't, you know, watching him, he looked to me to be about, you know, probably 240-ish, 245, and I didn't know exactly, you know, if he was athletic enough to at that weight to play defensive end, you know, and I kind of put him on the back burner to a certain degree because he just didn't. I didn't know that he struck me as a guy that I thought could be a full time edge player. So TJ Watt shows up at the combine, weighing in at 255, and I think that was the first thing that kind of got me sitting up a little bit because to me, you know, look. Say what you will about the Watts, or you know, obviously JJ Watt's an amazing player, a generational type player. We throw that word around a lot, but JJ Watt is a generational type player. But one of the things that you know makes him like that is he's smart. He's football smart. He studies it a lot, you know. And I think one of the things about him is. About the Watts is that I was certain that TJ Watt was going to be smart about this process because he had his brother that went through the process and he watched the whole thing and, you know, his agent, he knew exactly was going to be, you know, giving him good advice and he knew what was good, what was bad advice. So I knew that the off season, you know, the draft process for him was going to, yield the results that he was looking for. And I guess my point is that, the weight that these guys come into at the combine and the Senior Bowl, that the weight that they come in is often a statement by the player. Because, you know, for a guy who's the narrative is, oh, he's overweight, he's flat, he's fleshy. You know, for a guy, you know, an offensive tackle who gets that kind of rep and then he comes in at a svelte, you know, 310 and he's all muscle. Like they're making a statement there for a running back who, you know, they're saying he's 5'8 and he's undersized. He's played at 175. He can't play in the NFL. Nah. For him to come into the Senior Bowl and you know, but he's 5'9. Oh, now he's 195. Oh, he's almost 200 pounds. That's making a statement. And then there's this kind of statement by TJ Watt. He shows up 6.040 at 252. And to me, that's a guy making a statement. Hey, I can play defensive end in a scheme. I can play that weak side defensive end if you need me to at 252. Now, the question there was, could he be athletic enough at 252 to continue to be not only viable, but also the kind of person that you want to play a defensive end, which is a really, you know, important position, obviously. So he goes in at 252 and puts on an absolute show with a 37-inch vertical, a 6.793 cone, and a 4.13 short shuttle. And, you know, look, his tape, again, like I told you, it shows a young player still learning some that side of the ball a little bit, but he still is savvy. He knows what he's doing. He's got the one thing that is like his brother is that he's smart and he's got really strong hands, and he knows how to use his hands really well. So I would suggest we all go investigate T.J. Watt, because I think, you know, he's a guy, and he could be this guy that, you know, every year there's a guy where his game tape doesn't quite make sense to you, or you don't know quite what to do with him, or you feel like the player might be in transition a little bit from, you know, maybe from position, or their body's changing in a way that they're getting stronger or quicker or whatever. And what the combine does is it can show you their intent and reveal what they're going for. And to me, T.J. Watt looks like a guy who's finishing his transition into a defensive player and is working towards being a defensive lineman. So with that in mind, I'm going to go back and look, you know, through this new lens at T.J. Watt and all these guys. I that's what I recommend that we all do, is you take these numbers, you take them for what they are, and then you go see how it shows up on tape and how that changes your evaluation. And through that lens, now you have more information, because I think it is an important part of the evaluation, and you know, it gets right to the heart of whether these guys are athletic enough to play in the NFL. moving on, the Cowboys picked a great year to need cornerbacks. This is the most amazing class of athletes at one position that has come through the combine that I think I've ever witnessed. It's so deep and varied, and you know, there is something in there for everybody, basically. And one of the crazier things about this cornerback class is that behind the likes of guys like Sidney Jones and Marshawn Lattimore and Chidobe Awuzie, hidden often on the same team are guys like Kevin King, Garyon Conley, and Akello Witherspoon, who all tested extremely well and have nice tape. I don't know, you know, I know people that have followed me a while know that I'm a big fan of P. Spark, and the Cowboys are fans of Spark as well. And one of the guys who does it really, really well is Zach Whitman, and he has a website, the Three Sigma Athlete. I recommend you guys check it out, the number 3sigmaathlete.com. And what he does is that, you know, this is kind of the metrics I was discussing earlier, where he takes the average of he measures all these. Spark was a score that was created by Nike, actually, to measure athleticism of kids in high school, coming out of high school, going to college. So Zach was able to determine what that kind of formula was by, you know, using incredible math regressions. We won't glaze over. I know people's eyes glaze over when we discuss math, but long story short, what this does is that it takes all these different scores, finds out kind of an average for each position, and then gives you an idea of where that player's athleticism lies in relation to the rest of the players in his in the NFL. And then he comes up with what's called, what he calls, a Z score. And the Z score basically will tell you how much more athletic a player is in relation to the average player at his position. So, for instance, one of the cornerbacks this year, who we will talk about quite a bit in a second, is Kevin King. And he had what can only be described as a absolutely incredible combine. His Z score was 2.5. So what that means is that he is 2.5 times more athletic than the average NFL starter at cornerback, you know, based on the Spark score composite formula, which is just incredible. And this kind of will show you exactly, you know, how good you have to be. The numbers that I'm about to tell you will show you exactly how good you have to be to reach that level. King was kind of forgotten, or at this point has been like the kind of forgotten player coming out of that University of Washington secondary with Sidney Jones and Buda Baker. But he ruled the combine with his crazy 4.43 40, 3.89 short shuttle, a 6.56 three cone, which is ridiculous, a 39.5 a 39.5 inch vertical at 6'3", 200 pounds with 32-inch arms. Those are just absolutely phenomenal numbers. And I think that, you know, when you have guys like that at the top, it's pretty insane. But just pull back for a second and kind of talk about the class overall again. There were 8 players that rated as a Z-score of at least 1.0, which means that they are twice as athletic as the average NFL player. So 8 players coming into this class, and that's just of everyone who got scores, complete scores. Some of these guys who got incomplete scores or didn't run, there's no spark score for them yet. But of the guys that got, of the 20 that got tested enough to qualify for a spark score, 8 of them are twice as athletic as a average NFL starter. That's just absolutely crazy how athletic this class is. Another guy that I'd be remiss if I didn't mention would be Fabian Moreau, who's a Brian Broaddus favorite. He posted a blazing 4.35, and he looked really good in drills. This class is, you know, probably 15 deep with guys who could contribute at a high level right away. And when you look at the list, it's very, very impressive. I would not be surprised to see, you know, 20 of these guys gone before the third round. And it's such a deep class that I feel like it may even drag down guys at the top, because some people will just pass some of these top corners and just say, well, I can get a really good guy, maybe not an all-pro guy, but a Pro Bowl guy in the second round at this pick. So maybe I'll take someone else. So it really is quite an impressive group. And again, as a Cowboys fan, we know that we're in need of corners. It has me licking my chops, frankly. And then finally, the last topic I wanted to get to, the tight ends. You know, if the DBs hadn't shown up for some reason, we would be talking about the tight end class, because it was absolutely phenomenal. David Njoku, Evan Engram, Bucky Hodges, all 3 of them just put on an absolute show. I was just talking about the Z-scores. Each one of them were at least 1.5 times more athletic than the average NFL tight end. We had a guy in Engram who ran a 4.42 at 234 pounds. I still tend to think that Engram is, he's a wide receiver. I mean, he's not really playing tight end. I mean, he's at the most, he's a move tight end. But when you see a guy like Njoku run like a 4.64 at 246 pounds with 35.25-inch arms, like he's a freaking offensive tackle, and then 4 different guys running sub-7 3 cones, 3 different people jumping 11 feet or more in the broad jump at, including Bucky Hodges, who is 6'6", 257 pounds, with an 11, with the highest edge of the group. It's crazy, and it's really just an incredibly impressive group. And we didn't even mention the guy that was actually the highest rated athlete in the whole group, which was Juju Smith. Not Juju Smith. Juju Smith probably could put on a couple pounds to be a tight end. Jonnu Smith from Florida International had a 139 spark score, makes him a 95th percentile for athleticism in the entire NFL. So, it was just quite an amazing group overall. But at the top, O.J. Howard solidified himself as a top tight end. Running a 4.5 at 251 pounds with a 6.85 3 cone is quite impressive. So he has great tape. He has kind of limited tape because he just didn't get used a lot by Alabama for several years. But I think he's ready-made starter at tight end and really is going to make a team happy. I wouldn't be surprised if he went top 10, top 15. And then, you know, the small school guy that everyone's kind of been buzzing about, Adam Shaheen, didn't disappoint. He checked in at 6'6", 278 pounds, and ran a 4.79 and had a 7.093 cone at almost 280 pounds. Like, that's really crazy. And I just feel like he answered, you know, a lot like, you know, Derek Rivers. It answers some questions that you don't know how much, but it answers some questions as to, can he play in the NFL? You know, can he make that transition from the where he was in from a smaller college? You know, look, we won't know until these guys are out there, they're on the field and working out. But that definitely makes some guys, you know, a little bit more comfortable with drafting a player like this from a smaller school. And I think that's basically it for us, guys. I mean, there's obviously a lot more out of the combine. Everyone, make sure you guys check out, you know, FanRackSports.com for analysis all about the combine. There's, you know, pro days will start coming up, so we'll start taking those numbers. But again, I think that the really great thing about the combine, it allows us to help kind of contextualize what we see on tape. You know, identify what may or may not be problematic, and then, you know, go back and watch the tape again with you know, through the lens of, you know, okay, I know what this guy's athletic profile is a little better. You know, how is he compensating for it or taking advantage of it on the tape? And it'll help you kind of see the tape with fresh eyes and allow you to make a good evaluation. So, guys, I'll check back in with you next week. We'll have more Cowboys news, maybe a little bit more information about, you know, visits, about maybe some free agency stuff. Make sure you check in back with FanRagSports.com. Make sure you guys follow me on Twitter at McCoolBTB. That's at MCCOOLBTB. And until next week, happy trails, everybody.